fascinating because these people in this room, or 50% of them, you know, I think I've been hard to. And now I'm up here being judged. Last week I gave a reading to total strangers in Boston. And Jerry and Julio, who I saw earlier, I told a story to, and they thought I should tell you what it was. And that was, I stayed in a bed and breakfast in Boston. And the woman who owned it was 82 years of age and had managed to get a copy of one of my books, not this one, from a local library. And she wanted me to take it back to the library so I could prove that she had an author staying at her bed and breakfast. And she told me that the librarian was expecting me. So I drove, I think it was about 7 miles to this damn library to take back my own book. And when I got there, she fined me $1.25. And I think there's some sort of lesson in that, really. This is where books end up, you know. So don't get too grand an idea. I had to tell you that story because it's about the only funny thing I'm going to read tonight, really. This is a sort of dark book about a man who, when he was 12, committed a kind of the worst crime, really. He killed someone and served most of his childhood or his adolescence until his early life incarcerated. So it's about a man who's done his time, if you like, has paid the price for a mistake. And the book is very much about his relationship with his wife and his children, none of whom know about this background. He lives under a false identity given to him by the Home Office. But the trick about the book is that the reader is brought into this secret fairly early on. So the reader knows all the way through what this man did in a previous life, but his wife and his family and his work colleagues do not know. So you have that relationship with the protagonist that the other characters in the book don't have. So it's from that section I thought I would just read from. It's also very difficult to read from your own a book, really, as I think some of you have already discovered. You know, a short story is, in a sense, a complete piece of work. But I don't have a short story that's less than 20 minutes, so that didn't work. So bear with me while I entertain you with stories of darkness. So, and I can't remember the characters' names. It's quite extraordinary. Not only do I not remember what motivates them, but I can't remember their names. But anyway, Ray Greenland is my character's name. And this is a little section which he refers to his probation officer. His probation officer is called Tom Reeves. Tom Reeves was the home probation officer. He was plunging a chocolate biscuit into a mug of tea as I walked into his office. I sat on the opposite side of his desk, and the first thing I heard him say was, "Do you believe in the intrinsic goodness of a child?" But not before he'd finished that biscuit. "What do you mean?" I asked. "I know very little about you," he continued, "apart from what's in the CPS bundle." He patted the pile of papers on his desk that had been maintained and updated and followed me wherever I moved. "But this is mainly office analysis. Statements you made before and during your trial, CATS team interviews, prison reports. What they don't really tell me is, are you still a risk?" I should add that this is the first time he's met his probation officer after being released from prison. "I'm not. I don't think I am." "You're going to have to talk to me." "I am talking to you about your childhood, things that happened before you committed this." He couldn't finish the sentence, so I finished it for him. "Murder. I prefer to call it a killing, wouldn't you? You can call it a killing, but I did time for murder. Adults commit murder. You were 12 at the time." His eyes locked onto mine. "At some point, I'm going to have to ask you to revisit the moment of the offense." "Okay," I said, even though I'd forgotten that moment, all 10 seconds of it. I'd spent a year in custody for every one of those 10 seconds, and I still couldn't remember one of them. Tom repeated his earlier question. Did I believe in the intrinsic goodness of a child? I look for an answer in the calming reproduction Monets hanging next to anti-racist, anti-sexist posters behind his head. Thing is, Ray, when you're serving a long custodial sentence for doing a bad thing, after a few years, you often forget what it was you did that put you in here. Maybe you have to forget it because what you did makes you feel ashamed. In any case, you begin to think you're in detention for being who you are, not for what you did. You think you're a bad person. Okay, I said, now I'm with you. I do believe in the intrinsic goodness of a child. Yes, definitely. Do you know what intrinsic means? No. You're going to have to start talking to me, truthfully. I got into the habit of telling officials what I thought they wanted to hear, but Thomas always seemed to know the difference, and in time so did I. What happens then, when you begin to tell the truth, is a lot more interesting than when you tell lies. I said, I don't want to live, but I've left it too late to kill myself. That would be too good for me. Tom called this my depression talking. My one act of homicide was analogous to suicide, and I didn't need to kill myself twice. This was my second life, second chance. And instead of feeling guilty to the end of my days, he suggested I should find a nice wife to love. But that would involve me making a disclosure about the past, wouldn't it? And I wasn't ready for that. I had yet to convince myself I wasn't intrinsically bad. All I could hope for was that my guilt and shame might help me become a good citizen, and maybe a better citizen than most. I was only happy when talking to Tom, chronically depressed the moment I left his office. Then I would go to a cafe across the road from his building, and from there I could see his window. I'd sit there for an hour or more, or until someone in the cafe scrambled a memory. You look like someone I know, I've been told a dozen times. Then, back in my digs, I'd look at myself in the bathroom mirror. I wanted to see if anything of the child still survived in my adult face. But my eyes frightened me. They were shifty and dark. I practiced a look that wasn't my own, and thereafter, whenever I felt someone's eyes on me, would work up the same tension in the muscles across my forehead and under the base of my nose. Why do some people think they know you anyway? How do people who hardly know themselves think they know who you are? It is they only recognize themselves in others. Meanwhile, I was gone out of my mind for want of someone to share myself with. The loneliness was sending me crazy. I'd come home from work and wash up, then watch hours of TV until my jaw sagged from ennui. I'd take myself off to bed and sleep with silence. Every night I'd lie awake, listening to it in the dark. I saw Tom once a week for 12 weeks, then once a fortnight for the next 12 weeks, and monthly thereafter, 1 hour per session. This went on for 4 years, in the same late Victorian building, with its cold, disused fireplaces, bottle windows, and dark green walls, the color of suspended punishment. Nearing the end of 4 years' supervision, we still hadn't cracked open the moment of my offense. I asked him why. He asked me why. I've been waiting for you to start, Ray, but I can't remember it. You won't leave here until you do. You've got to go there sometime. I don't know how to go there. Is it because you don't want your supervision to come to an end? Why wouldn't I want it to come to an end? Because it's the only place you can be true to yourself. Finally, under his guidance, I did revisit the moment of the offense. It took a long time to get there, and I never want to go back. That is one story I never want to tell again. After that watershed was passed, Tom said I was clean. Recalling the moment of my offense was the final piece in the jigsaw needed to convince him I was risk-free. And to prove it, he called a case conference with members of the multi-agency public protection teams. His colleagues all agreed that nothing about this meeting should go on the record, on the computer. They weighed up my progress against the original offense. Then he proposed the suspension of my supervision. He told me the result in his office a week later. After 4 years trouble-free existence in the community, is how he put it, my supervision was to be cancelled. The license would remain in force and I could be recalled to prison at any time, but I was free to go. Tom no longer needed to see me again. In our time together, I'd learnt few facts about Tom, while he learnt everything there was to know about me. But he never complained our relationship was one-sided, said he was just doing the job, of which listening was the primary component. No one says anything until someone listens. That's the other thing we pros do, we don't drink water. And so, after 4 years listening, what did he do? He stopped listening to me for the first time. I didn't want to let him go. I was dependent upon him. Tom Reeves was the only person I didn't have to lie to. He alone knew how it was for me in the world. This was the worst possible news. I wept in his office and banged my fists on his desk. Tom sat there passively. After all his years of support, he refused to acknowledge my cry for help. He said, "You've complied with the terms of probation. You're free to go." Free to do what? "No, Tom, no, listen to me." Tom saw the big picture. He knew the thing about me no one else knew. "I'm lost without you. You have your own life now, a job on the river. You've been promoted twice. You don't need me." "No, you're wrong. I can't have any of those things without you." "You've earned your place in the world again, Ray." "I'm on license in the world. I belong to you." "No, you don't belong to me. That's wrong." Tom was married with three grown-up sons. He was a trained psychiatric nurse. He spent his childhood by the seaside. Now, the other thing I learnt so late in the day was that I did not belong to him. "Am I wrong?" I asked. "Whose personal history is it I'm lugging around and calling my own? I'll forget what I am if I lose you. How many times do I have to say this? I do belong to you." Then I added provocatively, "In the same sense you belong to your wife and kids." He didn't like this, my bringing his family into the room, but he never said anything. "My birth certificate is a lie. My national insurance number is a lie. I don't drive because I can't bear holding yet another fake document." "But you've worked so hard to establish it yourself, Ray." "Oh, I know. I'm so full of love for life, euphoric about the order of things. But only when I'm on the river, Tom, only when I'm away from straying eyes. No one can come after me when I'm on the river. That's more than most men feel, that joy of being at work. It's not joy. And I have to go home sometimes. Then I'm not safe. I leave work and I'm not safe. Don't you see? The river and your office are the only places where I can be myself." For 4 years, Tom's office had remained more or less the same. It never had a paint job. The same green walls surrounded us, except now they were closing in on me. Beyond the window, rain clouds moved sluggishly across the sky. I felt the barometer pressure dropping in my blood, felt the river outside at low ebb. All these people asking probing questions, year in, year out. It's only a matter of time before someone fingers me, someone who knew me back then. The stress is bringing up bad things in my head. "Like what?" he said. "A deep, soulful sensation, like the sensation of warmth that killing brings." Tom's eyes magnified through his spectacles. He watched me closely, my whole person, what my feet and hands were doing, as well as my mouth and eyes. He once claimed he could tell I was withholding something by the way I crossed my arms. "Are you just telling me this, Ray, so I'll not cancel your supervision?" Like I said, I couldn't lie to Tom. I no longer live with those impulses. I will always be at risk, but I'm not a risk. "Then I'm going to cancel your supervision. I want you to try it for a trial period at least. After a year, you can come back if you wish. I don't see you in a year. I'll take that as a positive sign. How does that sound?" "Like death." "Oh, come on. Can I keep seeing you as a friend? I can't be useful to you as a friend." "I could listen to you for a change, Tom." "Not on, Ray, and I think you know why." I started to panic, clutch at straws. Do you know you've got far too much hair at your age? How many of your friends have told you that? It's immodest. That's what my wife says, he said. He smiled at me. A result, a chink of light, but too little, too late. I went about my life in a permanent state of self-absorption, only free of it when working. Navigation is a defense against self-absorption. The river persuades you into its way of thinking. Motion is a state of optimism, and everything about the river lives in the present. Off the river, the past catches up with you again. I was struggling with this crippling depression that prevents a person from seeing a thing for what it is when I met Lily, that's his wife, at a Christmas party in Waterman's Hall, a few months after I'd been released from supervision. While she flirted with me, I was measuring up the risk involved to me in taking this further. After the first year of our courtship, I began measuring up the risk to her as well. I didn't imagine she'd forgive me if she discovered I was once that boy called Mark Swain. I was convinced she'd decide the past still lived within me as a primordial force and run a mile. We dated for 2 years and got married when she was pregnant with Flora. Now how could I tell her? It would crush her, crush this new family. My daughter's life would be cursed if the truth were revealed. 2 years later, Elliot was born, and I suspended the decision to make a disclosure indefinitely. All Lily's ever said is there's something about me she can't work out, a dark streak on my psyche. But admitted, it excited her. Women like men to be a little dangerous, and that has never been difficult for me. There are 1,000 lifers that, like me out there on license, their supervision cancelled. Who do you think you're married to? I am guilty of an unspeakable crime, but it was committed in another age. I tell myself all the time, we can have more than one life. We all deserve a second chance. So that thing is over. There is nothing of that past bleeding into this present. What was true then is false now. My wife is Mrs. Ray Greenland, and she sleeps with the angels. Mark Swain, if ever she remembers him, is that infamous boy who disappeared long ago. But one slip, one mistake, and it will all be dust. The tension continues to mount. If I'm vigilant, it's not because I prefer to live than die, but because the preservation instinct is embedded in the genes. So here's the thing. If that day comes and I'm cornered in some dark street and know I'm in the final seconds of my life, I'm not going to panic. If you're not scared of death, you'll never die. But until that moment arrives, I'll be fighting to stay alive with everything I've got. Thanks. Oh, we all do that, don't we?